Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Hey, everyone. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in, I guess if you're on the East Coast, good afternoon. You're listening to Freedomizer Radio, the Talia Like It Is show, and we're still continuing our talks on the home births. This episode is not going to be so much versus a hospital birth because I want to discuss the role of the husband, the role of the male when it comes to having this kind of decision and experiencing a home birth. So I figured, well, besides asking my own husband to do this, I figure my brother would be a good source. He's somebody that does a lot of the research before attempting anything. And, you know, he and his wife went through a home birth almost a year and a half ago, about a year and a half ago already, and so he would be a great resource for this. So we're gonna have Jed on, and Jed, whenever you're ready to chat, just go ahead and press the one button so I'll know to dial you in. For those that are tuning in right now and listening, just whenever you're ready, let's see if this is all right. Jed, if you're there, feel free to.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, or hey, there you are. Okay. Good morning. How's it going?
It's going good. The little one's still asleep, so I have some time to kind of free range before she gets up and starts her day.
I love that. Good. You know, maybe one of these days when we could really just start doing this regularly, it could be that we're in, more of like the studio space setting that I could take advantage of. But I'm with you there too. I gotta get Enzo down at the right time, and so it's okay. At least, I can hear you, and so yeah. All right. Well, so yeah, I don't know if you've been listening to the last few shows we've had when it comes to the whole home birth thing, but I guess we could jump right in. How long were you and Preston married for before you decided, okay, now's the time, let's get pregnant and do this baby thing?
Oh, well, I think we were married for about 5 or 6 years before we made the decision to have a child.
And I was prefacing this on my Instagram just now before, because I was kind of letting people know that the show is about to go on. And you were married for that long, not having children, not because you didn't want children, but a lot of that time you did spend researching about just even having kids and what that entailed, right?
Yes. Early on, we kind of happened into a kind of like a philosophy show that kind of woke us up a little bit out of our stupor, we started to look ahead. Like, we started to look a little bit further to see what exactly we wanted, not just for our child, but for ourselves first. And we kind of took it a step at a time. We worked on ourselves before we decided to make a new life. And I think it's important for both of us. I think that was that was what kind of extended the, that might have extended the decision a little bit, probably more on my end versus hers. But we both realized from the beginning that, you know, we kind of have to look at ourselves and be honest and then just admit, you know, out loud that we were not ready, you know, and just because we have all the parts, it doesn't mean we're, you know, we're ready to get in the car and start driving. So we cracked down. We did a lot of research. We looked into, child behavior, nothing too intensive, just kind of to get us in the mindset, to get us prepared. I mean, we weren't going for doctorates or anything. We weren't getting to the level of pediatrics, but we wanted to at least have a working knowledge of what it would be like to have a child, just to get that to become a reality in our minds, versus just, oh, these are just going to be nice thoughts, you know. We kind of want to just look at all the cliches in parenting and see just how much of it was true and how much was, you know, just old wives' tales, literally old wives' tales. And, you know, kind of, and through the research, we were less afraid. You know, every new thing we learned, we were just a little less afraid, a little less hesitant. It just took us a while. A lot of it was more our living circumstances, and, you know, something always comes up. You know, that's the one thing we kind of had to, when we made that final push to actually have the child, we just realized, well, a lot of stuff happened. You know, a lot of life stuff happened, bills happened, and even at the very end, it's almost like we weren't ready, but it was just as right a time as any as far as our knowledge of what we were getting into goes. You know, so we were ready in the knowledge of, okay, we've got enough in our minds to see the reality, to see where we want to take her. I mean, we already decided on the homeschooling before she was born. We had a lot of these milestones placed. So it made the decision much easier, and of course we have to look at, and we have to make that last decision. What do we do? Do we do a hospital birth or do we do a home birth? You know, so, and I guess since we went with the home theme, we looked into that first. And then even that we researched, you know, so it's, and that even took a little bit of time before we made the decision again. Again, it was a very slow process. This was a very, very planned baby. I think it made everything from step one to step 100 just that much easier. And, you know, it's nice to know it's coming. Always nice to know it's coming.
So I do want to kind of chat about, like I mentioned this to you yesterday, but we didn't really get to talk about it. In the last couple of days here, I've been inundated with a lot of private messages from people who just are having a really hard time convincing their spouse, whether they have kids yet or already have children, to get on the same page when it comes to anything that encompasses their children's health, or even having them to begin with. It's like a lot of the questions were, how do you recommend I get my husband on the same page when it comes to researching home births? Because they just are so trusting of hospitals and doctors, or how do I get my husband on the same page with the vaccine thing? And I wanted to get your say on that before we get into this home birth talk, because, you know, there probably are some people right now listening in that, although they might be really on board for a home birth the next time around, they're just in the back of their head saying, how am I going to even get this guy to consider this? Would you have any advice from you know, your point of view and being the guy? I mean, was it really with you and Preston something that you both agreed on? Did she have to bring it up first, or you know, maybe you want to kind of elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I guess to answer the, I guess first, before we even get into it, I think we have to establish where you are in your situation. You know, I guess everyone would be different. If you are like within, I guess if you're in the last month of having your baby, and you still can't convince your partner or no convincing was made, you're in a bit of a crunch time. But even then, I would even argue that you could still pull it around, depending on how you approach it. I think, first of all, I have to ask why, and I think it would be a good idea for the ladies to ask, or even the husbands. Maybe the husband also wants to do a home birth and the wife would rather do the hospital. But I think I would ask why first. And, you know, so that's the first, this really is the first step to getting any decision made. Why? Why do I have to do this? Why do I do this? Why am I doing this? You know, find out what the bullet points are first, because that's the list you actually have to address. You know, you may have all your reasons that you want to do something, but it's hard to bring your reasons and to bring their reasons. Get their reasons. Get the opposite party's reasons first. And if they line up with your reasons, great. And then you can kind of combine them and see what's better and what's not as good. So always get their bullet points first. Always get their list, their concerns, their worries, you know, because that's really what's holding them back, not yours in the beginning. It sounds a bit selfish, but hey, that's kind of how we make our everyday decisions. This is how we prioritize our decisions. It's internal, it's personal, you know. So I'd get that down first. Now, in terms of myself and my wife, she was already adverse to hospitals. So the decision on our end was a bit easier. I had a little bit of I didn't have much of a time convincing her that, in fact, she went out ahead and did the research because I don't know if this is typical, but I would suspect because it is the wife, the female who has to go through the ordeal, it's a little bit on them to kind of set the environment, you know, like if they're the type to set the nest, then they're definitely going to be the type to set the care and how they're going to be cared for during the process. All right. So I honestly think guys would have a harder time convincing a woman. I could be wrong, but this is an experience that she's going through, you know, so for that end, you know, if the woman's trying to convince the guy, you know, like I said, get his personal take on it. You know, a lot of it probably just has to do simply with safety. That'd probably be number one. You know, so why is it safer? Well, because there'll be doctors around, there'll be professionals. Okay, but you know, then you kind of bring your list into bear. Well, you know, midwives are trained for the exact same thing. In fact, unlike doctors, that's kind of all they're trained for. This is their specialty, you know. And then they'll talk about having supplies on hand or you know, medications on hand. So, and you know, again, this is the midwife services typically provide all of this. In fact, a lot of them will actually tell you that, you know, if it's getting to a point where they can no longer control the situation, then you will be taken to the hospital if really it is beyond their means, you know. So you have, you know, get your facts to bear and then bring their facts to bear, and then it's a process. I mean, I would imagine that it would be, especially if you're just in the beginning of the pregnancy or you're not even pregnant yet, you've got the time to get the groundwork, you know. And if a hospital birth is something that's really adverse to you, then, you know, I don't want to say hold the pregnancy hostage, because that just seems like dirty play, but, you know, get yourself into that situation where you're going to regret the decision later. It's most likely not worth it, especially when you're dealing with a life, you know. Pregnancy is already very stressful. So if you're going to give birth in a place, not if you're choosing, it's going to add that much more stress. It's going to add that much more complications to what's going to happen. You know, every new medicine they bring in the room, every needle, every whatever. I mean, whatever. If that's really not your environment, which it was not my wife's environment, she's like, that's, you know, even to the point where she's like, I'm having this baby at home. She pretty much put her foot down. Like, I'm having this baby at the house, and that's it. You know, because this I'm not stepping foot in a hospital. I mean, you know, but I was okay with that because we had gone through the research together. We had enough safeguards put in place. You know, actually talking to them. And there's the thing too. You know, a lot of these. If you're having trouble with convincing your partner, a lot of these midwife services, that if home birth is something you're honestly looking at, a lot of the consultation is free. I mean, just go in. In our process, we actually got to interview a lot of the midwives working in that facility. I think we saw four, and we interviewed with like 30-minute interviews each, you know, and we were interviewing them. We were asking them all the questions. I mean, a lot of them had gone through hundreds of home births, so we were, you know, pretty safe in the knowledge that these ladies are, you know, pretty competent with what they're doing. So, you know, we interviewed them, you know, talk to the midwife, actually talk to the professional. It's much easier because they'll answer more of the questions than you could. You know, so had I needed any more convincing, that would have been pretty much my final push in terms of getting comfortable with the situation we were getting into. So I think that would be a first positive step. You know, so tangent aside, get their concerns first, address their concerns, and if needed, go see the specialist and talk to them and have them address the concerns on his list. Or, you know, you can, if he really even wanted to, you can kind of preempt it. You can kind of just let them, you know, be honest with them, let them know they're having problems with the decision. These are the concerns. These are concerns of my husband, or these are concerns of my wife. Is there anything you can do to ease that? And more likely than not, they're going to be able to answer those questions or concerns. So
exactly.
Yeah,
I think that I think, you know, I love what you said, and ultimately, right, we make time for the things that are important to us. I mean, you have all the information out there, all the documentaries out there, but if your Friday night movie list is going to be the latest and greatest on Netflix, like, hey, everybody's talking about Bird Box, let's watch that, versus, you know, spending like the hour or two on sitting together and researching what's about to happen in your lives, if you're already pregnant or trying to get pregnant. I mean, that's obviously, I mean, out of my control. I can't go into somebody else's marriage and their lifestyle and tell them, like, no, this is more important right now than doing this. I mean, if you're not already kind of mentally wanting to just know so that you're not caught off guard, then there's not too much more somebody like you or I can do for that person, right?
Yeah. Right. Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, I guess with, oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to add to your point on, time, you know, that seems to be, it seems to be an excuse, but really, honestly, I mean, when people say they don't have enough time, it's kind of like, okay, I get it. I translate that a lot to I'm tired. Right? I think when we really break it down, you know, because I'm going to be, I need my, like, my cool down time, you know, when I don't have time, so that somewhere in there, it just means I'm tired, I'm bogged down, the week has been long, and I just need like an hour to just kind of chill and, you know, let loose a little bit, right? So we have time. Everybody's got time. We prioritize, you know, our work time and then our downtime and then everything else, you know, seems to be the third. And if you're going to be stepping into the role of a parent, you know, I'm sure you know, you got to readjust that a little bit. You know, the downtime seems to just flitter away. And it's kind of just a daily grind, you know, because when they're up, especially when they're young, and they're young and then they're all over the place. Never mind if they're just toddlers and they can't even, or, you know, infants and they can't crawl yet. But when they start moving around, you start to really feel the job, you know, the actual job of parenting, protecting, the guardianship. So you got to make that, you got to kind of take that habit out of your mind of I don't have time. It's like, got to make time. You just have to make time. You have no more, you know, but when they're out, like, you got no more real choice on that anymore. And yeah, I hate to say it, but it's not your life anymore. You know, stop being selfish about it, because it's whatever time you don't invest, believe me, it gets visited back later on in life, whether it's through tantrums or through, you know, that whole teenage phase. A lot of people don't realize a lot of that stuff can be avoided very easily if you invest the time in the beginning. You know, the more time you invest in the beginning, the less you're going to have to, the less sit down, the less that, you know, you put all that, you muster all that up and you buckle down and you kind of make it your second full-time job. And it's going to take both. It will take both parents. You know, the child is going to, especially if they're both around, they're going to have those needs. You know, so it is tired. You know, you do lose sleep time. You know, if she wasn't sleeping right now, she'd be awake, and I'd be doing this call while watching her. You know, that's the reality, for my everyday. You know, I'm fortunate that I get that. I feel very fortunate I get to work from home doing a job that I enjoy. You know, I had to give up other things just so I can have this opportunity. And on top of that, it also allows me to kind of be the stay home parent and to be the homeschooler that I want to be. You know, so I already laid the groundwork for all of this early on, because this is something I really, really wanted to commit to. Now, I understand that option's not available for everybody, and you are going to work 40, 50, 60-hour weeks, and you are going to come home, hopefully, to the other parent who is able to raise the children, because God knows we don't need another state-raised, institutionalized being on this world.
Really, I know. So much deprogramming going on, and just, yeah, it's always, I feel like every day at this point, and maybe the people that follow along too feel this way about me, but really every day it's like one more thing. Like, I wake up and I go, what now? What do I have to learn about now that I thought was one way for these past 30 plus years, but it's apparently not? And, but, you know, I guess you could take that as a challenge and find joy in learning new, or you could just sink and let yourself get completely crushed in no, it's just BS, that can't be. Because you get responses like that from people too, and you want to show them, not even so much, hey, this is the right way, but this is honestly another way. Did you even know of this option? And you get these reactions from some people that are like, no, that's it. And it's sad. But yeah, no, getting into moving forward with that when it comes to the male role also, you're of the mindset where I mean, what is your role as the father and the husband? Are you supposed to be that protector? And does protector mean just if somebody breaks into your house, can you defend your family? Or should that just be all-encompassing of what's going into your children when it comes to all of it, their education, you know, the injections, everything? It's just this role that I think many men don't realize that they have a huge part in, and a huge, it matters, right? Like, it matters that they're involved.
If there's one thing you learn in when you're in sales or marketing, it's optics, right? It almost doesn't matter that I'm a man. Typically, men have bigger frames than females, so the look is stronger, right? And especially when they're standing side to side, you know, the contrast between most men and women. Not all men. There are some women who are, you know, but it's not as common, especially when they're combined and they're from, like, you know, the same cultural background, say the same race. It typically stands that the male form is a bit bigger than the female form. So it's all about the optics. You know, we are now, whether or not we actually have the ability to defend, to protect, that's going to be based on whatever time they've invested in that. But, you know, most people just get a firearm, you know, let the firearm kind of do the job. But I think the point is, as far as the look goes, the family unit does look stronger when there's a male and there's a female involved. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, the bullies of the world, they're sharks. They smell that, and their blood in the water is how involved are the parents, or are their parents involved at all in these people's, or, you know, it starts as kids and then these people's lives, you know, and they can tell that, and they can tell in these, and when you bring up, when you're not bringing up, but when you're raising your child and you're not infusing them with that confidence, with that strength, with that moral character, they're just going to get picked off out in the real world. You know, you're just creating another, you're just raising a chum, you know, ready to be, you know, served and delivered to the sharks, you know. So you got to fit that. You got to, when you play that role, when you get involved in that role, I personally believe it's, you know, I come from a very traditional background, and I did end up with the role of making the decisions. And I think when they say that the males, you know, have that role, I think a lot of it is a leadership. I think it's a leadership role. I think it's the decision making. If they're not key on that, then they should at least be a part of that, you know, especially since, and I'm, again, with the age of the internet, it's getting gray very fast, but, you know, the guy's work, or whoever's making the most money, is going to be dependent on, you know, where you live, the kind of house you can live in, the kind of things you can afford on a monthly, the kind of resources your family can get. So that's all dependent on the key, the financial earner. The male role, I hate to admit it, but it is getting grayed out a little bit, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, obviously, we're still of an important part of society. We just have to kind of, we just have to remind ourselves of that a lot, especially with how males are being looked on these days. for the males out there, don't be afraid of taking the leadership role. Don't be afraid of getting in there with the decisions. It's not a bad thing. I think it makes, you know, especially for me, you know, with my wife, even when I make a decision, you always run it by each other, because she's a because, you know, the family is just as much part of your decisions as anything. I mean, hell, my child is, or children are going to be integral parts of the decision-making process. You start, you know, I'm going to start them early on that. You know, that's the easiest way to help them build that confidence, you know, showing them that, hey, your decisions, your thoughts and your ideas and your opinions, they have weight in the real world, you know. And, you know, your child goes up to you and says, you know, I want to watch a movie. I saw this commercial. I want to watch a movie. You know, you can have a discussion about it. You can set a time, a date. And then especially when you go out and you fulfill that, you know, they get, it's a little boost of confidence, a little bit of a, you know, I'm causing actions in the world. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of leaders and a lot of leadership roles, people, you know, tend to think, oh, you know, it's kind of my way or the highway. This is what I decide. No, leadership can just, you know, to try to think of yourself more as a, what's a good analogy? It's like you're pulling the same weight together, but everyone side to side, versus you pulling the weight by yourself. I guess that would be a good way to explain it. Like every, you know, people should want to pick up and pull the weight with you, pull the decision with you. But you kind of take the lead. You know, whoever's making the decisions, your family, male, female, at this point, as long as they're good decisions, I think that's what really matters in the end. Just making good decisions, making good choices in your life, and you make enough good choices, and you know, it tends to follow that good things will happen for it. You know, if you're going to take that role, you're going to have to actually listen more. You know, the leaders tend to base their decisions on the environment, what's going on around them, what people are thinking, what people, if someone's unhappy, someone's this, someone's that. I mean, we have picked up and moved before because of unhappiness, you know, so it's just, okay, we got to change the environment. We just got to make that call and just kind of, and do it, you know. So, you know, and these moves can be small, these moves can be big, well, I guess you gotta kind of, you know, kind of jumping into another tangent. Okay, I'm gonna try and pull it back. I'm gonna try and pull it back a little bit.
Yeah,
role,
no, I know
of the male.
But you know, it's so good, and I know that that could really be another whole series we could do together, because there's a lot of movements though happening. There's groups that are like the highly informed male. There's all of these, you know, and it's crazy to think that this society, and you're talking members in like the thousands, tens of thousands. It's like a lot of these men who maybe just the role was kind of, a lot of what they were supposed to be doing in life was just stripped from them, or they find themselves now in their 20s and 30s asking, what really is my role then? Because if I turn on the news, or if I, you know, get on my social media, there's nothing for me to offer. What can I offer anymore? Because women are acting like they don't want or need my input in anything. And so, yeah, that could really just go on and on and on, you know. But perhaps maybe... What are your thoughts? And before we get into your story and the research you guys did with the home birth, what are your thoughts then on just the notion that perhaps we made these vows to ourselves as children? Because we did come from a generation where growing up, our fathers were a lot more strict, and maybe too strict at times, and the discipline was too much, and that like overbearing, protective, wanting a say in everything was too much for many of us growing up. That as we have a lot of women who either said to themselves, I never want to be with a man like my father, or we have a lot of men who said things like, I never want to end up like my father. But then they stuck to those vows. They held those vows to the core, instead of just picking and choosing what they liked and what they didn't like and applying it to their lives. Do you feel like that maybe holds any truth in just the way that men are acting these days, where they just have no say in so many cases?
Not only does it hold truth, but I almost think the opposite is true. And it's not so much that they don't want to be like their parents. It's the denial. It's more like the denial that they are their parents. You know, personalities don't come from a void. Now, I don't know how you feel personally about it, but I did not magically wake up one day and say, oh, I'm Jed. Like, it's not like my personality was delivered to me. It's not like my brain all of a sudden reached a certain age and that there was a switch that was flipped. And it's like, it's Jed mode right now. You know, it's time for me to be me and forget everything else that I've ever learned. You know, that's not how the human brain works. We are instilled with the values, the beliefs, the concepts, and the very subconscious and then conscious level of everything that our parents left us and even what they didn't leave us. You know, so even that, if that neglectful nature, if they were neglectful to you, you were neglected, that neglect is going to pass on to you, that behavior of neglect is going to pass on to you too. You know, so whether they want to give it to you or not, they're going to give it to you. If you, you know, if we're talking about people struggling with this and these roles that they're in, well, I think the first thing you need to recognize is you are your parents. You know, your first voice, the voice that comes out when something is said and your brain is, you know, for lack of a better word, triggered into a response. That first response is not you. It's your parents. It's either your mom's response, the response that your dad would give. It's the first voice is always from who brought you up. You know, whether it's your grandparents or aunts, you get the guardians who raised you pass on their personalities to you, because that's what our brains are designed to process. You know, we don't have it any other way, unless you come from a different dimension. I don't know. So I had to recognize, and this is why when, you know, that phrase, think before you speak, for me, it's very real. Even in this phone call, even as I talk to you, my first, you know, I hold back a little bit, even for that split second, because my initial response is my dad's response. I want to get my dad's take on it. You know, that's kind of how I'm geared. I'm very much of my dad's belief system and structure initially. And I have to hold that back. I have to hold my first thought, and I really have to think about my first thought. It's like, is this something I would say, or is this just something I heard from my dad? And it's annoying. It's virtually every conversation that I have. But he's there.
To be fair, our father was just very opinionated and had a lot to say about everything. So and not everybody grew up with a dad like our dad. I don't know if that's even an unfortunately or fortunately stance, but yes, because he just had such a strong opinion. And then many times a researched opinion too, it's just natural, right?
even if the opinion is good, it's not like I'll never use his opinions. If his opinion was a good, solid, grounded in facts opinion, I might as well use it because it's already there. But
yeah.
I have to make sure, and I think the point is, whether it is good or bad, you know, and I would say it's fairly good. You know, he had a lot of good points. He's led me in a lot of good ways. It was just the way he said it kind of made it feel more averse to it, to wanting to do it than to want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially since, you know, we tend to have these conversations when we're upset. You know, and that's really the worst time to try to convince somebody of something, when they're already upset. You know, you give it that cool down period. You let the brain process the anger a little bit. You know, but again, like my father, I have that tendency to just want to gear in when people are already mad. It's like, I got to hold back. I got to just push myself back and say, it's not me, you know, it's not what I would like to do in an ideal situation, you know, so good or bad, the voice is not mine. And I think that's the point. And it's kind of like taking that voice back by recognizing you are your parents or you are your guardians, you know, and if they were absolutely, you know, if they were fantastic, if they made a lot of great choices, if they have the kind of life and relationship that you want to have, well, by all means, why not follow the blueprint already? You know, if they're in a really happy marriage, everything is stable, they've got stable jobs, they've got stable friends and relationships, do it. You know, they're handing you a life on a silver platter, and they're going to get you places, you know, and most likely if they're already that way, they're going to have great relationships with their kids. So it's going to be kind of a no-brainer. But, you know, on the opposite coin, if there were some trials, let's just say, if there were a lot of disagreements and more disagreements and resolutions, you know, and you kind of see the product of what's happened and you want to change things a little bit, well, the first place to start is you, and recognizing who you are, who you honestly are. And I think that's something a lot of people, you know, don't have time for these days, and which is unfortunate, because this is the birth, the fertile grounds for that midlife crisis, you know. That phenomenon that people think, oh, this just happened. No, this doesn't happen to everybody. This happens to people who've never really got a grasp on themselves, their life decisions. And, you know, when you don't have that grasp, like, how can you be happy? How can you be happy with anything you choose when you don't even recognize that you're not choosing it? You know, these people, they wake up and they're like, I didn't choose this life. And it's just like, well, you kind of chose it by not getting in the driver's seat, you know, of your soul. So yeah, you kind of drove, you know, you drove off, you went off road. You just didn't recognize, you just didn't feel the bumps along the way. And then now you're in this place, you know, so get a grasp of yourself, get a grasp of your soul, your heart, get a grasp of your voice. You know, this is always like a first step, like, you know, before you can even try to convince people of making a right decision, really look at yourself and make sure you're making some right decisions. Make sure you find out if you've made those decisions before. And then be honest about that. There's no, I mean, you're not harming anybody by admitting that, you know, you're hardly harming yourself. I mean, it's pretty much, you're just looking at kind of a wound or a scratch or a cut or whatever, however deep it is, and you're just pointing it out. Okay, there's a problem that needs tending to, you know, and it's much easier to fix yourself than it is to fix other people. It's impossible to fix other people. I'll tell you that much. You know, that's why you kind of want to surround yourself with sane, stable people, because not all of us are psychologists. And even a psychologist will tell you, it's like, you can give them the history, you can give them all the texts, you can dump the book on them, and it's all for naught if they don't accept that a change needs to be made. You know, so you start, you know, start working on yourself a little bit in that respect, and get yourself into that leadership role of your life, and then you can, you know, kind of take that forward.
Before we get into Preston's your story, yours and Preston's story with the home birth, I guess we could end for this bit on it's never too late. If you're a man and you're finding yourself in your 40s, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, it's never too late to take on those reins and take on that role that, you know, why shouldn't you have a say? Why shouldn't you do the research and start genuinely caring about that side and stop leaving that role to people that have no liability if something goes wrong. And this is not just about vaccines or honestly with everything, because at the end of the day, with all the decisions you make, you're responsible, right?
Yeah.
You decide to do something to your kid. You decide to go on with a procedure, medical, whatever. You're responsible. And the kid is not going to, you know, when they ask you in the future, how did this happen? How did you allow this to happen? I don't think it's a good enough answer for them to, you know, to just tell your kid, well, you know, at the time, that's just what everybody was doing. Or, well, the doctor just said that, you know, I mean, talk about the sudden lack of respect.
Yeah.
If that's the response, you know, there's this like, what? Really? You followed trend? That's why I have this now debilitating, you know, whatever.
It's
not a good enough response. And we're not perfect, and we are going to make those mistakes. But I think that the child in the future will be a lot more forgiving and understanding if you said, you know, yeah, we did this, and it was not the right decision, but we've tried to correct it by X, Y, Z. And then you have your, you know, response, not just this, well, I don't know, everybody's doing it. And that's really what a lot of people say. It just makes me scratch my head with that. But, well, yeah, so, okay, your wife did not want to, she obviously had an issue with hospitals. She didn't want, she knew she wanted to attempt a home birth. And so what were the first, I don't know, what were the first things that you two did together in pursuing now this new venture for you?
Well, obviously, when we got into, we learned a lot about the home birth and then the homeschool unschooling while we were researching children, right? So it was already plugged in my back of my mind. It wasn't like, oh, what's this new, you know, it wasn't like a new concept or what is, you know, what's this? I have a re-sparked curiosity. I didn't always have this. I mean, anyway, I asked a lot of questions when I was a kid, but they may not have been, you know, they weren't the right questions. They weren't the important questions. How I wish I could go back and just relive my life asking more questions. You know, maybe if everyone asked me what's my one regret, I think that would be my one regret. Didn't ask enough questions. Honestly, it was saving so many problems. but as far as that process goes, I asked all the questions because I'm very curious, and I like learning. I do like learning new things. I like learning about new things, especially things that I haven't really got to delve into. And since we had brushed on home births earlier, it was something we always wanted to expand upon. But I always thought, well, eventually we're going to want to get pregnant, and then we'll kind of go down that road. So we did, and it really just started initially with just reading a lot of personal testimonies, right? I think you can hear all the statistics that you want, but you'll take a number out of that when you go into what people actually did and the process of the step by steps, you know, what was involved. I mean, and we saw it from all the different levels. We even watched a German woman just do it by herself. Like, she literally just lodged herself in a doorway, I think in her kitchen. No matting. There was nothing under her. It was just literally this baby was just going to free fall. And she just grunted, squatted, grunted. And within a minute, you know, the baby was out. You saw the head. She grunted again. You saw the shoulders. I mean, it's just like, boom. So it's like, okay, of course, my wife and I had to look at each other and say, like, all right, so that's not the level you want to be at, right? Come on a little bit more around you, right? So we kind of went from there. So we started at the most extreme, and we kind of like pulled back a little bit and said, okay, where do we want to be at? You know, so we read about the heated tub. You know, what are the advantages? Like, what's the good? What's the good out of all these elements that we're adding into this experience? Because you don't want the hospital, You know, so we did compare it to the hospital. You know, so we looked at, you know, we looked at even because the big fear, oh man, I think the big fear that's on the table, especially for maybe even the guys who don't want to go through this, the C-section. I think every birthing decision can probably just be jutted down to what happens if I need a C-section? You know, forget every other question. What happens if this baby doesn't want to come out and I need to, like, surgically cut myself open? So, of course, we looked at that.
Okay.
You know, because it was a genuine fear. We looked at it. We saw, okay, what are the C-section rates for home births? And they're surprisingly low. I forgot what the number was because we had looked at it for such a long time ago, but it was like, what? It couldn't have been more than 8%. Something real. And I guess that also depends on the state. There's probably so many other factors that led to that number. So it was like, okay, it was a low number. Then we look at the hospitals, and they were running like 40, 50 plus percent. So like, okay, well,
yep.
So what's so
it's the average? Some hospitals
like, okay,
are
well,
over, some are over 50%. Some hospitals, like I know the
yeah.
a couple in Nevada, over 50% C-section rate. It's
right
beyond me.
Right. So we got to look at that, and then you look at the home births, like, okay, well, obviously something's happening with the home birth. That's different by not just, you know, a little marginal, but by a lot, by a huge margin. Home births tend to not lead to C. So, of course, and so that fear, initial fear, my big fear, was calmed immediately. I was more calmed about not having the C-section at the house than I was at than more worried about having to go through the hospital, because I was almost like, man, if I just played the odds, if I go to the hospital, I'm pretty much asking for the C-section, you know, and
yeah, you're right.
Preston didn't want
it. The numbers game. Yeah,
exactly. That's when it actually becomes a reality that can happen. So it's like, okay, something's happening, you know? So we looked into it more, you know, apparently the natural birth position is different for every woman. It's not just on a bed, legs spread to the heavens. It's sometimes they have to be on their knees. Sometimes they have to be on their back. But apparently the back one, it restricts a lot of the pushing muscles. So it makes it harder to give birth on your back for most women, you know. So we looked at that. You know, it's like, okay, so birthing position, C-section, check. What about just, you know, and then we looked, like I said earlier, we looked into the hot tub. You know, apparently the hot tub helps relax a lot of the muscles. It helps, you know, absorb some of the pain, not all of it, obviously, but, you know, and some of the initial discomfort. Help, you know, it's just a constant soothing, you know, keeping that 100, you know, that temperature just right. So look into the tub. Okay, we want a tub. You know, we want to do that. And then we looked at the interviewed the support staff. You know, we not only made sure that they were competent with their job, but we made sure that their beliefs aligned with ours. You know, so if you're not into the vaccines or the meds, well, we had to make sure we got a consultant and a midwife who was optional in that too, who gave us that freedom to decide. You know, so the control we realized very quickly. As far as home births go, the control is on the side of the parents. It's on the side of the couple. And especially in a situation like that, as far as what caters to you more, like who, or sorry, I shouldn't say control, but who's being catered to? You know, is the hospital being catered to, or is the patient being catered to? And when we aligned all our bullet points together, hospital versus home births, we realized, the midwives work for you. You know, you have a say in a lot of the important decisions that are being made in the process versus just, for the most part, being drugged up and just ready to give birth, like a human vessel, a living human vessel, just ready to come, you know, pop a baby out. So I wanted what my wife wanted in this instance. I wanted the experience to be more for us than the hospital. You know, I wanted her to be a very or I wanted, and she wanted to feel like, she wanted to feel, so I guess when it boils down to it, she wanted to feel like she was giving birth to the baby, and not she was just lying there, and somebody else was giving birth for her, you know, pulling and almost pushing, you know, practically pushing for her, you know, drugging her up, dumbing her senses down, and just, you know, so she could just have this child. But she wanted to be a part of it. She wanted to take, and you know, as far as feminism goes, I mean, there's nothing. I don't think it's hard to top that in terms of you in control of your body, giving birth to a life. And I think the one thing, she had already enough reason to go through the home birth experience, you know, but it was fun watching her. It was fun watching her get excited about it. You know, a lot of women, and I don't say a lot, okay, but there are women who think of the process and they get scared about it. And you know, rightly so. It's most like, you know, especially if this is the first kid, it is a daunting experience. It's something to, you know, you see all the pain involved, and you see all, so there is a big decision in terms of, because they have to go through that. You know, they already see the ends, the end from the beginning. And on our side, the more we looked at it, the more we researched, the more we learned about how much easier it could be for us, or you know, the high potential for it to be easier. We started to really look forward to the prospect. Her, in particular, she was very excited. She wanted to catch her own baby. That was really the selling point for her. Like when she saw that video, it was like, you know, because the home birth place we went to, on their website, they had videos, you know, of home births. So she watched all of them. And the one thing that really stood out is like all of these women were able to actually catch their own baby or grab their own babies, be the first to touch as they came out, you know, not with gloved hands or anything, but like skin to skin, and then pull them close immediately, you know, like baby, because the baby also just went through a really traumatic experience, you know. So for my wife, it's like I just want to hold her after that. You know, I need to hold her. I just went through a moment. She just went through a moment. We're both just going to hold each other. And it's a very beautiful thing. You know, it's a very beautiful thing to watch. And then it was a beautiful thing to watch in real life. You know, so we watched it first and online, and then we went through it. We got to that moment. That, because that was the moment. That was the finish line, and we were both very excited to get there. You know, so even in the learning and in throughout the process, it was a very of course, there were still nerves, right? It never gets not nervous, but
yeah, of course.
You have a very positive outlook. At least we did. For our experience, we had a very positive outlook on the end, you know. And then, of course, beyond that, after the, you know, that's when all, I guess we figured that's when all the child book stuff will help us out. That was our decision-making process as far as what we were going through. And I was there. I went to every meeting. I went to every sonogram. We read all the, you know, they gave us guidelines, they gave us homework, they gave us diet stuff. You know, we followed as best we could, to be honest. But you know, with her teas, she had her raspberry teas. It was just kind of like, you know, it was a much easier road, and we were like, you know, we were very, very grateful for the knowledge and for the help that we received in throughout the process, you know. And of course, far more long lasting, especially since this wasn't just, you know, a quick hospital visit. They take some stats down and they go, no, you know, we have a conversation. We were able to have that time to talk with the, you know, more experienced people, able to get even more, you know, got in for more information. We got packaged, just kind of like preparing us for the in-between and the afterwards, you know, and we're even going back for some health checks like next week. So it was, you know, it was great. I'll never forget it. And of course I will, and my wife and I will be using a home birth service for the next child and the child after that.
Yeah, I was there during the actual home birth part experience,
yeah.
And it was quite the experience. And I got to admit that even with everything I look into and how against hospitals I was, when you two told me that you were both expecting your first child and that you for sure were set on having a home birth, I was kind of nervous for you guys. And I also felt like, really, maybe though for their first, they should at least just be in the hospital. And it's like, just due to how, you know, we were raised and trained up, that was, even though I had two hospital births at that point, which were terrible, I don't know why, but it like came over me with just, you know what, it's because it's the unknown. It's so unusual to hear about. So we automatically just have our assessment of, you know, well, I don't know. That might not be the right way, but after witnessing it and how she got Ellie out, you know, with those few pushes, and then seeing her recovery after and then comparing it to mine, I was just kind of like, wow, you know, we weren't even thinking about a third child at the time. And I just remembered knowing that, you know, okay, I was a skeptic, but if this happens again and I get pregnant, I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah.
It was quite the experience. So how about when it comes to just the emotional, if you're okay with sharing that, when it came down to going to all the appointments with her, because you went to every single appointment with her, right? And explain,
yes,
those appointments. Many of them you mentioned were very similar to just kind of like a counseling session almost, and it was very just like a therapy for her, if you want to maybe get into that part a little bit.
Yeah, well, the checkups, they weren't as frequent in the beginning, but the closer you got to the birth, we were like going in practically every other week, if not every week, until the birth. So there's kind of like this, you know, we kind of go every 3 to 4 weeks, just to kind of feel the baby, weigh her, you know, check on the growth of the baby, the heart rate, obviously. Those were great. I loved, we were really looking, you know, it's such a small thing, but my wife and I, we got a kick, just made our whole, we could have been having even like a fight that, you know, on the way to the, I remember one time we were having like a fight on the way to the facilities. And we went in, you know, kind of just, they did their monitoring. They asked her about her diet, and you know, they weighed her, they checked her stuff. And then when they checked the baby, you know, once we hear that heartbeat, then that's it. It's like, we pretty much forget. We forgot what we were fighting about. Like, we literally just got in the car and like, weren't, you know, we were just, was it even worth getting in? You know, so it was just one of those things. It just kind of like, it made it so real for us when we could hear that. You know, and then there were even visits when she was having a problem trying to hear that. And, oh, man, those were like for those few seconds, like high stress, like, oh, God, what's wrong? And then you hear the heartbeat, and then you just, you know, everything kind of just melts away. So those were great, just for that sole purpose. But, yeah, there was, you know, anytime Preston had a question, they were, you know, they had an answer for it. You know, she'd make a list of, like, 10 questions, 15, 20 sometimes, stuff she saw, stuff she read about, you know, because we were still reading testimonies. And the complication, you know, they're never all perfect. There can be common, you know, especially like, you know, little things that can even happen in everyday births, like just regular births, you know. So you have the umbilical cord, you know, it can wrap around the baby and stuff like that, you know. So we just have to ask those questions, see like if it was, you know, just to see, just kind of ease our comfort, you know. So of course they would tell us, you know, if it got really bad, if it got stuck, then, you know, they're close to, we live close enough to a hospital and they already had a designated spot for us to go should something, you know, out of the ordinary occur. Yeah, but for the most part, as long as you're not moving around a lot, as long as you're getting a lot of rest and you're sleeping properly, you're sleeping comfortably, and it should, it, you know, most more often than not, it goes fine. You know, so we had a lot of concerns, and honestly, none of them ever hit the birth pool. You know, by the time we got to the birthing pool, none of those concerns really mattered. In fact, truth be told, there was a surprise thing that happened. You know, everything was fine, everything was okay, but we weren't even expecting that thing. Didn't even have a question for that thing. But at the same time, the ladies were ready for it. You know, so it was fine. They had all the knowledge. They had, you know, that's the thing we also had to realize and kind of let it sink in that they have gone through this. You know, the lady, in fact, the lady who was handling our case, she was the founder of that, of the facility in the state. So, you know, what better what better hands to be in, you know? So we were very, you know, surprised. We were very, you know, still, you know, our nerves weren't as high as they most likely would have been if we were just in the hospital, you know, just waiting for results to just walk through the door, when it was just so much easier for them to be there, you know. Now typically our midwife, you know, they don't arrive until it comes closer to when the baby's about to come out, because that's really when the expertise is needed. But we did have her assistant, who we also interviewed with. She was there during the interviews, and she was there with Preston from the beginning, you know. So Preston started early, and then one of the other midwives came in because the other one was, you know, coming off from another shift. And then when that one was ready to come in, then the assistant came in to replace the first, and then the main midwife came in to, you know, for the latter half. So someone was always there, you know, and that obviously eased my worries, but I think eased Preston's way more, that there was somebody always there to kind of literally hold her hand and go through the motions with her, you know. So that kind of personal care was just, it was amazing. It was something that obviously we were expecting from the service, but when you really go through it, it's like, man, it just, I mean, it's, you know, having the pro with you. It's like playing with the pros alongside, and just knowing that you're going to be making, you know, the right decisions and the right calls and, in real time, you know. So also in our minds, comparing it to what a hospital birth, you know, as far as just being left in a room will go until you're ready to go. Maybe every now and then someone comes by and gives you some ice chips or whatever they're passing along these days to help induce the labor, you know, but.
Or just Pitocin. You want some ice chips or some Pitocin?
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah, so, but literally, yeah, but, you know, and then of course we get to ask more questions. You know, we get to ask all the questions up until she literally pushes the child out. Yes, the experience was, what I think was more important, and I think one of the most important points, especially on her list, was, like I was saying earlier, she wanted to feel like she was part of the experience. She didn't want to just feel like that, you know, the fifth wheel. While the doctors did all the work. No, she did all the work. She did the work, you know, and it goes a long way when it comes to kind of realizing the kind of, you know, and not to say anything about your first two, you know, because you didn't know this stuff, this option was around and or what it could be. For my wife, it was that extra, just that extra level of commitment in terms of, I'm the mom, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm the mom, this is my birth kind of idea, you know? So she was able to hold that for herself and kind of control that for herself.
Most women should have that mentality with it. Yeah. And admittedly, I didn't really take charge of my first two births. I left that up to the professionals, you know, in the hospital setting, not realizing that there's so many more professionals, in terms of experience just alone. Like, for instance, when I was looking into my OBGYN that insurance would have provided for free, you know, fine. I asked them the questions, like, how many births have you done? Oh, over 200 at this point. Okay. You know, how many of those births were just completely natural, no drugs, like unmedicated, and she was not on the bed and on her back, and, you know, she wanted to be in a different position. And it was like, they only knew of just less than a handful of times that that's actually happened, because it's not normal. Like, that's not really the way, but, you know, but then you talk to any of those midwives, and I know the center that you used, because I used them as well, countless hundreds of different kind of home birth experience, hospital experience, birthing centers, all of it, and all different kinds of positions and stories and breaches and what went wrong, but how they fixed it. It really just was easily 1,000 times more in the experience level from these people that are coming in doing this, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it's, and, you know, granted, they have the experience, and yes, you know, for the most part, they do handle babies. You know, it's funny here. I'm going to, in real time, what year did hospitals start handling births? Let's see what Google comes up with.
Using the good old interwebs right now.
Get on there. And just for some perspective, okay, here we go. So home births was, till the advent of modern medicine, the de facto method of delivery. So the United States, in the United States, there was a large shift towards hospital births beginning around, oh my gosh, I thought it was much earlier, but so just the turn of last century, so the 1900s. In the 1900s, that's apparently when hospitals started actually taking the responsibility of home births. So we have to consider, granted, for about 118 years, they've handled home births, but, you know, for the last, average estimate of human existence, 82 years, so the math is, people have been handling it at home. It's been 100% at home. So the abnormal way historically is hospitals. And yeah, of course, people come in, it's like, well, yeah, but, you know, the medications are better. And it's like, yeah, honestly, the hospitals have gotten really good at literally taking the experience away from the woman. Like, it really is no longer the woman's, you know, if she just wants to be drugged up, not feel anything, and then just have it done for her, then those are the options available at hospital. And I'm not going to begrudge any woman who doesn't want the full, I guess, the full experience. That's fine. That's fine. You take the consequences with that. The C-section, the high C-section rates, and the aftermath of the drugs, and of course all the pre-vaccines today, and whatever. Just perspective-wise, you know, people have been doing this for a long time, you know, and I think it's fair to say, especially with how, I guess, modern home births are still being done, they still have a leg up as far as success rate, as far as recovery rate. You know, it's, you know, people have been doing, the females were designed to do it naturally. And so naturally, for now, you know, until the advent of more intrusive genetics come into play, for now, natural seems to be a friendlier, more positive option than a hospital birth. You know, so yeah, so it's I still consider home births the normal way. I mean,
yeah, and it was. It's crazy.
I think you remember
just
the conversation.
Talking with just talking with mom when she was in town recently. You know, I asked her about her births, right? And they're all pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But then she mentioned that, you know, because she came from a family with 8 children, and our grandmother was from a time where they were practicing this thing that's currently illegal in hospitals now in America, but they still, people do still practice this in other parts of the world, but it was this twilight method. Have you heard of that? It's like the twilight sleep. So they literally, our grandmother, who had 8 children in the span of a decade, like she just was pregnant all her 20s, she was not awake for one birth. She would go into the hospital. They would knock her out with drugs, right? Completely knock her out.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. She didn't have C-sections. She had natural birth. Like they, the babies all came out vaginally, but they were assisted because the nurses were helping push the baby out, and the doctor would go into her with forceps and sometimes just their hands and pull the baby out while the woman is knocked out asleep. And then when she wakes up, the baby's already there, washed, you know, clean, ready to be passed to the mom when she's ready for the baby. But that was the routine. And
man,
it was normal, and that was the standard. Whether or not it came with, you know, and there were many multiple side effects. She wasn't exactly, you know, of the best health in her 30s and 40s following all of this. I could only imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But even with mom, I think she said that just with me, she had to be knocked out because I was stuck. And so they had to give her some kind of drug. She doesn't even know what it was, but it made her just fall asleep because the doctor had to go in there with forceps. And that was just very standard practice and not even unheard of. So it's like, that's not even, honestly, with our grandmother, it's like barely just 2 generations ago. So this whole hospital thing, you're right, it's so new if you think about it.
Yeah.
And
and
we're the test subjects. We're going to be those statistics. We're going to be all those numbers that our children and their children will be talking about. Do you know what they did in the 2000s? Like, do you know what they used to do back in 2010? I don't know, right? Like, because it's still so fresh when you put it that way.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing. And I hope for that. I hope that hospital births will at least be, you know, it's nothing to say against hospitals, you know, when it comes to like life-saving, you know, when you're critically damaged, to coin some RPG terminology, hospitals are, you know, they'll put you together again. They will put you back together again. Think we give too many things to hospitals that humans can do naturally, and they try to like put some kind of artificial measure on it that honestly in the long run will, you know, do what anything does in terms of institutions go, and it will just make us get used to them. You know, the same way if you take too many headache medications to cure your headache, you kind of just end up getting more headaches in the long run because your body never learns to really just kind of sate it on its own. So whatever, you know, whatever you start substituting, you're gonna lose. You're gonna lose the original intent. And I really hope just because it only takes a few generations. It really doesn't take much. As far as the evolutionary scale goes, still a strong measure to fight against in terms of hospitals. But hopefully we kind of ride this wave out until more people wake up with the realization that, you know, I was designed to do this. You know, I was designed to go through this. And this was kind of, especially if you're religious, you know, it is a weird notion to just give it all up to somebody else to control, you know. And a lot of times it's, you know, you kind of leave it in your God's hands, but we still try to control this natural phenomenon through artificial means, you know, as far as pregnancies go, you know. So and especially since it's a really new concept, you know. So, but I don't know if you believe in that thing. If you believe you were designed, you were meant, you were designed for certain purposes. Well, clear purpose, you know, far more than males. And males don't have anything like this in terms of just our ability to get it started, let's just say, which is also being taken away from us. But this was a purposeful, yeah, this was a purposeful option that women have, most women have. It's like, why, you know, why take that away from yourselves? And I guess you really have to go through it. Guys, you know, if you're listening, like, if this is something that you're really considering, or you're at least learning about, you kind of have to experience it to really get the full breadth of how beautiful the whole process can be, if you have that level of commitment, but involvement. I mean, you know, as far as hospital is concerned, guys, we're like handholders. You know, we either get to watch from the back or watch from the front, but we are spectators in that event. Whereas at the home, you know, not only is the environment, you know, it's your environment. It's the environment that you're, for the most part, you're going to bring your family in. You know, I mean, how many kids, you know, hopefully more now than before, but how many kids can say, you know, I was not only raised in this house, but I was born in this house. You know, there's a strong familial connection. And you're moving around, you know, when things are happening, you're replacing bags, you're checking on the temperature of the water. Of course, you're holding her hand, and then as she's getting to her different positions, you can even, depending on how severe it gets in terms of how much she needs to move, you can get in, you know, you get in there with her, you know, you help her, you know. My wife had her two positions, so I wasn't needed to get in, obviously, because she was on the edge for the most part. But if she was going to take like a walk to the middle, then I was going to help, you know, I was going to get in there, and I needed to help keep her balanced, you know. So you're a part of it. Like, literally, you'll be as much covered in the baby aftermath as she is, and as the midwife is, and kind of everyone in the room gets involved, you know. It adds to the, I think for me personally, it added, it helped strengthen that connection that I have with my wife. You know, this is something that we did together. We feel like we did it together. And of course, we get to see the result every day, you know, walking and climbing all over the place. And I don't know, maybe that's why I became more protective than I thought I would, because of my involvement in the whole process. I don't know if that was the result. But man, I may hover too much around my child. Because I do feel so close to her. You know, I got to be at least the second person to hold her. You know, after she was caught, after she came out, you know, literally came out swimming. But yeah, it was an experience that I want to kind of, I'm looking forward to reliving again. I guess that's what I got to say about that.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. Mental preparation check. Did you have to do anything to get yourself physically ready for it? I mean, the exercises in helping her through the contractions, did you guys like practice that together?
Yeah, I I'll be honest, it was really more on her. And the great thing about you know, the Lamaze classes, I think, you know, if you're going to go through a hospital birth, probably want to take the Lamaze classes because you don't have that coach with you. But since Preston had an assistant with her, a professional assistant with her at virtually what 90% of the labor experience, she had coaching, you know, so someone was there helping, checking her heart, helping her to breathe. So a lot of that was kind of alleviated from my end. As far as physical goes, well, it kind of just happens at any kind of given time of the day. So the only preparation I really had was just a lot, you know, I'm kind of a night owl to begin with. So those late nights, I guess, kind of added up to at least helping me stay conscious throughout the whole thing. Because I think we got up, was it at either 2 or 3 in the morning? It was pretty early when it all started. I don't think we got any.
Yeah, it was quite early. I think she started at midnight,
yeah.
Right? Like midnight, she already
yeah.
was starting the contraction. But no, but I mean,
yeah,
you
yeah,
had to have been somewhat prepared in the what to do, because just like people who plan for hospital birth and don't make it to the hospital, there are people who plan for home birth, and you do get those stories where the midwife made it and the baby was already out, you know? So like, in
yeah.
other words, I guess, what was your kind of backup plan, you know, hey, what if we go into labor and she comes fast and, I'm not able to, you know, midwife doesn't get there in time. Did you have that kind of sorted or in the back of your mind?
Obviously, like I said, we had an assistant there. So she was monitoring the progress, and I think it was even the assistant that had to convince the midwife to come earlier because Preston was ready to go a lot sooner than originally anticipated. You know, they were figuring
right.
it was going to be a bit of, you know, a longer labor since it was the first child. There was a lot of like, you know, there's obviously a lot of common practice
mm-hmm.
knowledge that comes with the territory. And so, but Preston's case was a bit of an anomaly in terms of how fast this between the contractions, how fast the contractions got, and then the birth, and then how fast she was ready to push. So it was the assistant who had to call the main midwife to come in, you know, ahead of schedule technically, so that she could actually handle the process. As far as the backup plan goes, well, thankfully the assistants are also, you know, they're also in training for the main job, so they do have that practical knowledge. And as far as that moment goes, really, when the thing started happening, you're kind of just in like, just kind of like a catch mode. Like you're just ready. I'm either ready to catch the baby if I need to, or catch my wife if I need to, you know? So, as far as the physical preparation beyond just, oh, well, there was obviously we have to gather the materials ourselves. So it's kind of different. You know, we just get
no,
to make sure we have
I
enough towels,
more
to make
like-
sure we have.
I guess I meant more like helping her through the contractions. Like, you know, how with Jeff, he had to do the hip thing that he had to learn how to do that kind of holding. I mean, you guys went through the same type of thing, or did you look into that? Like how to help her go through the contractions physically?
Well, we got
using your hip.
I guess we got, no, I'll be honest. We did not go through that. So I didn't get any kind of like physical. Now it could have also been because we were seeing the founder. I don't know. I don't know for whatever reason, as far as physical techniques, I'll leave it to you. I'm actually curious now, what did Jeff had to, what were they teaching him?
Oh, well, for every contraction that I had to go through, Jeff spent, like, I think he was involved with 90% of the contractions. So he was physically not, I don't want to say as tired as I was after giving birth, but he really just had zero energy. And you know how I was up and about that night. You guys actually even came over for dinner after I had my home birth. You guys were in the house, like,
yeah.
what,
you guys were in the house maybe 7 hours later. We were all having dinner together. That Jeff was like sleeping on the couch. But
yeah.
No, with every contraction, you know how they last about a minute. Jeff had to have his hands pressed on my hips. So whether I was facing him from inside the tub or standing with him or from behind, he was reaching over and he would press on my hips and the bones right there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently when he put that kind of pressure on there, so he would be holding down with a force through the entire contraction. So he, you know, that's why they were saying, like, he's exhausted. He's tired. But apparently the way that they push, it helps also open up, you know, the pelvic, the muscle down there. It helps it kind of open up to allow the baby's head to make it through. We learned that part really just, honestly, the week before I gave birth, because we were seeing the midwife for one of the last visits, and I had watched, you know, I had been watching a lot of the YouTube home birth videos, and there was this one woman who was talking about this massage and those pressure points that you have to hit when you're in labor and contracting,
mm-hmm.
that will help you not, because my biggest fear, honestly, was the pain. The first two babies, the pain would get so bad that if somebody offered me the epidural, I would take it. You know, it was too much pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like I'm not going to be able to get past this pain and just sit there with the no drugs. How am I going to manage? That was really my biggest fear. And so I had to look up how people get their mind off the pain that didn't involve hypnosis. And that was what was coming up in a lot of the videos I was seeing. So, well, I guess I can show you that, or Jeff can show you that for your second birth, what he did, because honestly, during the contraction, when he put that pressure on my hips, it was like half the pain was immediately gone. It wasn't as painful, and I was able to breathe and get through it for that minute because of how he was pressing on there. So.
Okay. Well, that is something I'm going to look into for the next one, because I do remember the assistant doing that for Preston as far as the back massages go. So I'll definitely want to take a more active role as far as that goes, because that seems like something I could definitely do.
It was like the pressure got my mind off. It was my body was now, I was focused now on the pressure he was pushing on my hips. So if he does that, if he were to do that to me now with no baby trying to come out, it would be kind of painful. I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's like a really, really tight hug. That's very not necessary. That's, you know, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I preferred that uncomfort to what was happening with my body. And I'm telling you, it's the only thing that got me through the pain and the contractions. So
I do remember we did also for a few sessions, like leading up to the pregnancy window. We got her in for a prenatal massages. So her body was really kind of just, you know, we wanted to make it as relaxed as possible, loosen as many muscles as possible. And I think these help a lot, because they were especially telling us that you don't realize the strain your back, your legs, your body goes through while you're getting more pregnant. You know, it's just knot after knot being filled, you know, muscles getting stretched, especially if you don't stretch regularly. You still have to work during your pregnancy. These things creep up very, very fast, especially towards the end. So by the end of the pregnancy, we got her in for a few sessions, and it really helped, like, help her sleep better. It helped her digestion. You know, it helped just to have everything less tense. And I think that was also a big help in terms of when the day finally arrived, her body was not already, it wasn't pulled to as much as it could be as far as the muscles and tendons go. So that was also a big plus for the experience.
Right. And
So I guess in closing, because we only got a few minutes here, was there anything else you wanted to add just about your experience and maybe a few other pointers there? Or?
Yeah, I guess just in perspective, this process is scary. I think any process is scary the less knowledge you have. You know, I think we've mentioned that before further with other topics. And this will be a reoccurring theme, I think, in the future. But, you know, the more knowledge you have about something, even if you're deciding a hospital birth, at least have all of the facts, all your where you're supposed to be, like all the process, have it down, at least in the back of your mind. It's going to take off half the pressure of getting into it. And, you know, as far as home births go, as far as me and my wife's experiences go, the more knowledge you have, the more knowledge we got, the more excited we got about it, and the more confident we got about the whole experience. So I think with anything, if you especially go, being a parent, giving birth, going to school or whatever, get some either somebody who's been through it or, you know, read some testimonials. I mean, these things go a long way in terms of just getting into the mindset, you know, and I think that's what you need to do first. Don't get into the mindset when it's already happening. Get into the mindset before the event, whatever it is. I think that'd be a good note to close on.
Yeah, I think you wrapped that up perfectly. Well, thank you again, Jed, for being on the show, and hopefully we can have you on again in a couple weeks, because I'm continuing on with the homeschooling part and mostly unschooling part of of where we are today.
Right.
So really appreciate you having the time today to chat again. And we'll talk to you soon. All right. Okay, guys. Well, thanks for listening in. I'll be saving the link once again. And it's the Chris Level Show is on next. So we'll be back on next Wednesday, same time, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. You guys have a great weekend.